Welcome to the First Century Church Podcast. My name is Stephen Wilhoy, and I'm the lead pastor at First Century Church, and it is an honor to have you with us today. The goal of the podcast is simple. We want you to be encouraged, challenged, and inspired to go further in your faith than ever before. If you'd like more information about the church, you can visit our website, firstcenturykc.com. And if you happen to be in the Kansas City area anytime soon, we'd love to have you join us for one of our live gatherings to connect with you in person. Again, thanks for joining us today, and we hope that you enjoy today's message.
So we're going to continue our series in the Beatitudes today, and we're going to go a little bit out of order on this Mother's Day. We'll kind of just flip what was going to be this week, coming next in Matthew 5 for today, and then we'll do next week what was going to be this week if we go in order. But today's beatitude from Jesus is sort of like an oxymoron in a way, you know, like jumbo shrimp. I love oxymorons. I love language stuff like jumbo shrimp or the idea of freezer burn. You think about that? Well, no, but it makes sense, but it's an oxymoron there. Or if you say that person is seriously funny. Just the way that we put words together. Jesus does this in this teaching on this beatitude today in Matthew 5, verse 5. We're just looking at these kind of one by one the next several weeks, these teachings of Jesus on how to live. Here's the definition, a blessed life, which as we looked at in the opening week of the series, Jesus is describing a life that is full of happiness and wholeness and a way of living that promotes mutual human flourishing. This is the kind of blessed life that Jesus is talking about. And so today we'll be in Matthew 5, verse 5 at the beginning, and then our main text to get to where this comes from is in Psalm 37. So you can turn there as well, Matthew 5, verse 5, and then Psalm 37 for the majority of our time today. So let's look at this beatitude for this week. Matthew 5, verse 5, Jesus says this, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. It sounds like an oxymoron because that's really not how this world seems to work. The meek are weak. The meek get run over. The weak are soft-spoken. The meek don't get their way. They're left behind. But however, I think the idea of meekness, especially in our modern culture, is severely misunderstood and misapplied. So we will look at what meekness is, but at the beginning, before we jump into that, I want to explain quickly what meekness is not so we can see the difference here, okay? So meekness is not weakness. It is strength under control. Meekness is not weakness. It's not being puny. It is actually strength under control. There's two historical ways, even philosophical ways, not from the Bible, that explain this idea. So Aristotle, the ancient philosopher, we'll quote him about a different subject in just a second, but he says that this idea, he talks about the philosophy of the mean. So there's two extremes to every virtue, and if you go too far on one end, it's not a virtue anymore. If you go too far on the other end, it's not more of a virtue, it's actually less of a virtue. And so he's talking about meekness in this way. It's not anger, and it's not indifference. It's something in the middle. We'll spend more time unpacking that here in just a moment. It's also someone, he used the example, it's not someone who's an overspender, but also not someone who's like a penny pincher. It's like in the middle, in the mean is the idea here. The other way of thinking of this is like a wild animal that's been tamed. So if you have a wild animal that's been tamed, they still have that same animal spirit in them, but it's now under control. You can control this wild animal because they've been trained to function in this middle type of way. And on Mother's Day, moms are sort of like this. And it depends on the mom, but maybe your mom was this way. You know, in public with her friends and family, she's meek. You know, she's very calm. But man, if you as her kid mess up in public, if you get the look, mama's not meek anymore, is she? It's strength, but it's under control. Or she knows, if you like, especially if you're in church, if you, as a kid, you were sitting in church and in the big church with the adults and you were too squirmy or too loud, she knew exactly where to pinch your arm, you know, where you would sit up straight, you would focus, you would behave, that sort of thing. Moms are this idea of meekness in the flesh. It's strength under control. It's the same idea. Meekness is actually, it translated gentleness as one of the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians chapter 5. So it's something that we should aspire to. In Colossians 3, Paul says that we should clothe ourselves or put on meekness as a way of life. And Jesus says here in this beatitude, it is the blessed way to live. The way of meekness is a blessed way to live because it doesn't mean you're a doormat, as we'll talk about. It doesn't mean you let people run you over. It doesn't mean you never have an opinion, never speak up, but it's how we live life in this meek way that is so important. And again, let's go to Psalm 37 because Jesus, it seems like, we don't know if he, there's no quotation marks around this beatitude, but he's nearly word for word quoting a verse from Psalm 37. And really this whole idea of meekness is all throughout this psalm. So we'll spend our time sort of looking at the background, maybe the impetus behind this beatitude of meekness. So let's look here first at this near quote from Jesus at Psalm 37, verse number 11. It says this, "But the meek shall inherit the land and delight themselves in abundant peace." So we're going to look today on what it means to be meek. What it means when Jesus says, the meek shall inherit the earth. We'll look at first what it means to be meek and then what we think Jesus is getting at with the idea of inheriting the earth. There's really three, I think, main components that we see in Psalm 37 from which verse 11, Jesus pulls this idea in the Beatitudes about what meekness is. Three main descriptors of this word as we work through Psalm 37. So let's jump right in to see these three character traits of what it means to be meek. The first character trait of someone who is meek is they are someone who is humble. A meek person is humble. Psalm 37, again, look at verse 3 and then verses 5 and 6. We'll come back to verse 4 later. Psalm 37, verse 3 says this, "Trust in the Lord and do good, dwell in the land and befriend faithfulness." Then verse 5 and 6, "Commit your way to the Lord, trust in him and he will act. He will bring forth your righteousness as the light and your justice as the noonday." A meek person is first humble, and it connects to last week a little bit, the poor in spirit, because a humble person admits their need for God. They commit their way to the Lord. They trust in the Lord. They let him handle the issues of life, and that will become even more important as we move on. And it really does show, we'll see a somewhat of a connection in the one we'll come back to next week as well. Even though we talked about they don't necessarily have to go in order, now you could say they do, but I think at the very least, you see groups of three. You see three main themes, and so the last one from last week, this one, and the one next week, all these similarities come in this way. We're committing our way to the Lord. A person of humility and meekness recognizes and admits, I need someone bigger than me to pull me through life. James, we'll look at this verse in James real quick, and then we'll come back to it for a specific reason in just a moment. But in James 1:19, he talks about this kind of patient, meek person. James chapter 1, verse 19 in the New Testament, the brother of Jesus writes this, "Understand this, my dear brothers and sisters, you must all be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry." So a person who is meek, who shows humility, can listen and is teachable. Being a good listener in general is a way of meekness and humility. I don't have to say everything I think all the time. I don't have to impress everyone with all my deep thoughts all the time. I can be meek and kind of hold some things back. Maybe they're just for me. That's a good way to live in this meek sort of way. I value what others say by listening intently, by focusing on what they're saying, not buying time so I can reply to what they're saying without me even listening to what they're saying. That's not a conversation. But me actually actively, deeply listening to someone else is this way of meekness and humility. Really, also, it comes down, if you go back to Psalm 37, it's seeking the Lord's will, seeking his wisdom and what he would have me to do. It's okay, I'm talking to me for a second, it's okay to say I don't know sometimes in life, in situations, in conversations. It's okay to say, I'm not sure about that. I don't know that. I'm not aware of that. That's okay to ask for help or to try something different, a different method that you've not thought of before or weren't courageous enough to try before. It takes a humble person to live that way. It takes a person of meekness to live that way. Seeking God's way is the first step in humility. I think about John the Baptist, right? So he comes before Jesus. He's got his own booming ministry, doesn't he? He's made a name for himself. He's become quite a local celebrity. Yet, when Jesus shows up, immediately John says, I must decrease so that he might increase. That takes a meek, humble type of person to say that. because he didn't have to step aside, but he knew that was his role. He didn't have to say, no, focus on him. He could have said, no, it's me. He's trying to steal my thunder. He's trying to take my disciples, because Jesus did take John's disciples. They left him to follow Jesus, and he blessed them on their way. He said, yeah, I came to get you ready for him. Go with him. So, but it takes a humble, meek type of person to see things God's way. And I will mention this too, that it's okay not just to say, I don't know. It's okay to say, I was wrong. I would say let's practice saying that, but I won't put you through that pain this morning, okay? This is not a torture chamber, but I won't make you do that. But it's good to admit in humility and meekness that I got this wrong, or I behaved in a way that I should not have, or said something that was wrong or bad. I should find value in continuing to learn and stretch and grow in those ways. So a meek person is, first of all, a humble person. And then we see here the second main idea, the second trait of a meek person is that they are patient. What it means to be meek is that we are patient. Go back to Psalm 37. We'll look at near the top at verse 7 and then skip down to verse 34. So let's look at this first. Psalm 37, verse 7. It says, "Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Fret not yourselves over the one who prospers in his way, over the man who carries out evil devices." Then skip down below to verse 34, Psalm 37, 34. It says again, "Wait for the Lord and keep his way, and he will exalt you to inherit the land. You will look on when the wicked are cut off." Patience is a huge part of what it means to be meek. Anybody else struggle with this area in life, patience? Or is it just me? Now, patience is important. And so there's two areas here we'll look at for a second. First, we need patience with God. It says, wait on the Lord. Wait, it says it in both verses. Wait on the Lord. Wait on the Lord. That is not always fun. Rarely is it fun. It is not pleasant to wait on the Lord. But patience is important. You know, you think about if you don't have patience when you're cooking chicken, you're going to get really sick, aren't you? You know, I want it now. It's like, you're going to get really sick. Patience with God is the same way. We have to find this rhythm of God and work on his timetable and not our own. That is so difficult to do. So it requires this attribute of patience and meekness as a way of life. You know, many times we ask God all kinds of questions, don't we? God, why am I still stuck here? God, why won't you answer this prayer I've prayed over and over and over again? God, why is this process taking so long? Or like the psalmist says, God, my unethical boss is prospering and yet I'm struggling. What's going on? Or my cheating ex found someone right away and I'm still alone. Why is that? Why, God, why? What's going on? Why are you waiting? Why won't you hear me? Why won't you act? We're worried about our timetable. And I would say it's fine to ask God those questions. I'm not saying we shouldn't have them. I'm not saying we're not going to have them. However, here's what I want us to remember as we live this meek way of life through patience with God, and that is this. There are no shortcuts with God. There are no shortcuts with God. It says here, if we trust, the result will come in his timing. And when it comes to God's timing, I'm thankful for his timing. In Galatians 4, it talks about the arrival of Jesus. It says, at just the right time, God sent forth his son. God knew the exact moment in the Roman Empire, early in the stages of the Roman Empire, exactly when to come, exactly when the other people in power would be there. God knew exactly the moment to send Jesus. Now, as far as the people of God were concerned, God, what's taking so long? Where's the Messiah? We've been talking for hundreds of years now. Let's go, let's go. And God's like, no, at just the right time, I will send my son. It's the same way for us. At just the right time, God will answer that prayer. At just the right time, God will give you the next opportunity to make that next move. At just the right time, God will open the correct door for you to walk through. But it requires patience with God. So don't look for the shortcut, because what you're going to do, if you're looking for the shortcut, and you think, oh, maybe it's this next street, you're going to miss the actual turn, and it's going to take you longer to get there. Hello, like, you know, children of Israel, 40 years type of thing. So we don't want to do that. We want to have patience with God. A meek person knows that they're not in the driver's seat of their own life, and they're okay with that. Now, sometimes we want to kind of take the wheel and do a little thing here and there. And just like God's like, no, I got it. It's okay. Just be meek and be patient. So we want to be patient with God in this way. The other thing is also patience in general and patience with other people. We need that, don't we? We need patience with other people. So it's not like when your friend makes one mistake, we cut them off, you know? Oh, I'm done. You didn't text me back in 30 seconds, so you don't care about me like you used to. You're like, no. Let's just have patience with people. They have stuff going on. They've got lives. It's not that what I have is the most important thing or the most dire thing all the time. But we are meek by how we make allowances for other people to have stuff going on in their lives too. And that also makes me think when I said make allowance. In Colossians 3, Paul says make allowance for each other's faults. And that requires a lot of meekness and a lot of patience. Because typically, I will hold someone to a higher standard than maybe I even hold myself to if I'm not careful. But no, the meek person says, no, I've got to just kind of see through my false expectations of others and just give them some grace. Show meekness in these relationships. So we can practice this every day. You can practice this in traffic every day. God gives you a chance to be meek as you're getting maybe behind schedule. I got to go, I can lay on the horn. I can cut people off. I can, give them the one finger salute. Or I can be meek and patient with people and understand they've got places to go. I should maybe left earlier, that sort of thing. In line at the grocery store. Come on, let's go. Of course I go in the line that's the shortest, but it's taking the longest. Does that happen to anybody else besides me too? I thought was the shortest line, so I go to it, and then I'm like, how in the world am I still here, and everybody else has gone through? So God gives us chances all the time, thank you Jesus, to practice meekness through patience, all right? But that's what it means to be meek, is having patience. Here's the third trait of meekness that we see from Psalm 34, or 37 rather, is that a meek person is forgiving. If you thought patience was hard, buckle up, all right? A meek person learns to be forgiving. Look at this in Psalm 37, verses 8 and 9. It says this, refrain from anger and forsake wrath. Fret not yourself, it tends only to evil. For the evildoers shall be cut off, but those who wait for the Lord shall inherit the land. There it is again, the inherit the earth. So not only does a meek person have patience with the faults of others, but it can learn over time to forgive the faults of others. A meek person doesn't always have to seek to get even or settle the score, because what's that going to accomplish? In the moment, I think, yeah, I'm going to show them and they're going to feel bad. And in the end, if I actually do that thing or act that way to them, then I feel worse somehow and haven't accomplished anything. But meekness avoids that. What will it accomplish if we escalate situations beyond what they are? Okay. So another verse to consider here, let's go back to one that we looked at a moment ago, and that's in James chapter 1, verse 19. I want to focus on the last part about this issue. I want to talk about anger for just a couple minutes here. When it comes to forgiveness, dealing with anger is a big component of that. So back to James 1, 19, he says this, understand this, my dear brothers and sisters, you must all be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. So a meek person is learning self-control with their emotions, being slow to get angry. So I mentioned Aristotle earlier. Here's what he writes in his work. It's called the Nicomachean Ethics, and it's very interesting because it's a long, complicated philosophical work, but it's sort of like the Beatitudes on steroids before Jesus even said them. It's about how to live a happy life, and it's not obviously from a Christian perspective, but it's interesting what he says here about anger, and he says this in the Nicomachean Ethics. He says, the man who is angry at the right things and with the right people, and further, as he ought, when he ought, and as long as he ought, is praised. I'm going to read that again because that is packed, but we're going to look at it for a second. The man who is angry at the right things and with the right people, and further, as he ought, when he ought, and as long as he ought, is praised. So both Aristotle and James, you probably never thought you'd hear that in church, but you've heard it now. Both Aristotle and James agree that anger is not inherently wrong or bad, or James would even say not inherently sinful. He's just saying what you do with that, or how long you hold on to that, or how you direct that, can get us into a danger zone. Anger is a normal, natural, understandable part of life. But look at the caveats here again. At the right people, at the right things, as we ought, when we ought, as long as we ought. Here's what Paul in the New Testament later on in Ephesians 4 says about this. It kind of explains, I think, what we're looking at here when it comes to anger and our awareness of forgiveness. Ephesians 4, 26 and 27, Paul writes, "Do not sin by letting anger control." You may have heard that phrase, "be angry and sin not," right? So this New Living Translation says it that way. Don't sin by letting anger control you. Don't let the sun go down while you're still angry, for anger gives a foothold to the devil. Uncontrolled anger is not meekness. It's actually the inverse of that, if we're honest. Uncontrolled anger in a person is pride. Because that person is saying, I don't care how my emotions affect someone. I don't care how my actions affect someone. I don't care how my outbursts affect someone. I'm angry, and I'm going to let everybody know it. And we can't forgive and be meek if we have uncontrolled anger. That is sinning by letting anger control you. And a chronically angry person is not meek. A chronically angry person is also full of pride because I have a right to be angry and I have a right to express that however I want, to whomever I want, in whatever way that I want, and I don't care about the consequences. That's just not the way of a meek person. So when he says, blessed are the meek, we have to learn to control our anger in order to forgive others. And I'll mention in a second what that does not mean, but I wanted to say that at the outset because I think this is an area that we need to work on, and we'll get to that here in just a second as we get to inheriting the earth. With that, though, is also this idea that a meek person doesn't have to always feel the need to defend themselves all the time, and this is not easy. So in Numbers chapter 12, Moses deals with this. His own brother and sister are talking about him, and they're talking about his wife, and he shouldn't have married her. Does God really speak to him, and who does he think he is? He's just our little kid brother. No, you know, whatever. And that's kind of what they're doing. They're attacking him, and Moses just lets God defend him. And so he strikes his sister Miriam with leprosy. Now there's some like, what about the brother? You know, it's like, well, there's some, I won't get into all that for lack of time, but there's some other things there that long-term effects may have affected his brother in a different way that isn't as obvious. However, Moses could have defended himself in anger at that moment. He might have even been justified to do so. But what you see in that verse in Numbers 12, it says Moses was the most humble man on the earth. And yes, if you say that Moses wrote that, you're going to, wait a second, can the most humble man really write that about himself? Apparently he can, because he did. But that's why I connect that here with meekness. It puts that in there in the middle of this story. He's being talked about by his own brother and sister. His own family and wife are being talked about by his other family. And yet in meekness, he allows God to deal with that for him. That is extreme meekness. So it's possible to be firm and direct. We can set the record straight if we want, but the idea is to speak the truth in love. And we'll talk about more at that in just a second as well. We want to let our character and reputation speak for itself. And that gets into then the second part of this beatitude for just a few minutes here. If we're talking about, if Jesus says, blessed are the meek, okay, we see kind of the factors of that a little bit here. But then he says they will inherit the earth. So let's look just for a few minutes here about what it means to inherit the earth. And I want to look at two aspects of this one as well. I want to look at a relational result of living this way that I think Jesus points to, and also a material result of a meek, blessed life from Jesus here. Okay. So the first thing I want to point out here is that inheriting the earth is this idea that meekness wins people over. For us to inherit the earth, quote unquote. Meekness wins people over. Look again at Psalm 37, near the end there, Psalm 37, verse 37. Check this out really quick. It says this, "Mark the blameless and behold the upright, for there is a future for the man of peace." Notice those words there in the first line. Mark the blameless. The psalmist is saying, look at them, notice them. He's saying, behold them, look at them, notice them, and really, in essence, be like them. The blameless, the upright, the meek person. That's what he's wanting us to look at and emulate in a great way. And then also Proverbs 15, verse 1 shows us what a meek person looks like who inherits the earth, and we'll look at it for just a second here. Meekness wins people over. Proverbs 15, verse 1 says, "A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger." The reality is that over time, through our actions, our reactions, our words, our behavior, we earn a reputation for one or other of these ways of living. So throughout your life, whether you're conscious of it or not, the way that you act and react in different social situations puts you in one of these two categories. So when you walk into a room, people feel one or two ways about you. So either you bring calmness and confidence into the room, you kind of lower the temperature, and people are like, oh, good, they're here. Things are going to be okay. Or you walk into a room, and everybody gets on edge because they're like, if I look at them the wrong way, they are going to blow it. If they think I'm looking at them the wrong way, they're going to blow it. If we start talking about religion or politics, watch out, Betty, you know, that sort of thing. You've gained, whether you realize it or not, we've gained a reputation one way or the other in this area. And my question is, if we're looking at Proverbs 15:1, wouldn't you rather have people, bless you, wouldn't you rather have people talk about you as someone that they respect, someone that they're not afraid of, they're not waiting for the top to blow? Wouldn't you rather be that kind of person? Even in a disagreement, even in a heated conflict, right? We can learn to be meek people, you know, by de-escalating situations instead of making them worse. This is an attractive trait. This is what I think Jesus is getting at by inheriting the earth. This kind of meek person who can turn away wrath is going to have a lot more to gain socially, relationally, and therefore spiritually by living this meek kind of way. I want to challenge us to bring back the lost art of civil discourse. It is a lost art. So there is a website, civicscience.com, did some research over the last, they don't have the numbers for the 2024 presidential election yet, but they have for the 2016 and 2020 presidential election. Here's what they found. During the 2016 presidential election, 13% of Americans said that they unfriended someone on social media because of political posts. Now, it doesn't describe which way. So it could be, you know, I hate the other side, and so they've given this view, I'm going to block them. Or this person's so annoying and so abrasive, I don't need that in my feed, so I'm going to cut them out. Either, it's both sides, but either way, in 2016, 13% of Americans unfriended someone on social media due to political posting. In 2020, it was 61%. Now, 2020 was a perfect storm. It wasn't just the presidential election. There was a lot of other things going on. If you can recall, 5 years ago, it seems like way longer than that. However, a lot of things happened. So the numbers for this 2024 haven't come out yet. I bet they're going to come back down because other things in the world are a little bit different. But still, we're looking at this is where our culture is. We cannot have civil discourse anymore. It is an anomaly. It is just a freak thing. If people can disagree and still get along, but we can do that. A meek person can learn to do that. We can disagree peacefully. We can disagree and still get along. We can disagree and even still be friends or family. We can do that. A meek person can learn to do that. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Now, meekness, again, is not weakness. So it doesn't mean don't have an opinion. It doesn't mean don't have strong beliefs. Jesus is not saying, again, he can't say in Matthew 5, don't believe anything strongly, and then in Matthew 28, go change the world with the gospel, because he knows the gospel is going to offend a lot of people. So he's not talking out of both sides of his mouth here with his words and ministry. He doesn't mean don't believe strongly, don't share that, but it's about method. It's about how we do that. It's not just tone, it's also, it's not just volume, it's also tone. So I can yell at someone, you're so stupid, you're an idiot, and that's obviously offensive to them. I can also very sneakily say, did you even finish the third grade? But I've done the same thing, haven't I? I'm equally offensive, even though one is sneaky. Can you guess which one I've mastered in? It's the second one, okay? I've had to learn over years. I can be more cutting by being less obvious, so I've got to learn the way of meekness and just don't even say it at all. Find a way to compliment them maybe instead. Oh, you're so smart. No, don't do that, because I don't, you know, don't do that either. And that's another thing. We don't want to try to pull things back and say, oh, I was joking, or I was being sarcastic when I said that. Well, you still said it, right? And so what that does over time, again, a harsh word stirs up anger. If people can't trust if you're being serious or not, then you can't be taken seriously. So a meek person, we have to be very careful about how we communicate, how we do things. Again, winning people over through meekness is about maintaining our credibility and character as people who follow Jesus. Even in difficult situations, even in complicated situations, even in heated conversations, even with hot button issues and topics and discussions, the key is to speak the truth in love. Both are required. The truth and love are required. And that, I think, is what Jesus is talking about. Meekness. Let's choose meekness and aim for that. It's the best result in the long run. We inherit the earth by gaining, winning people over in that way. Here's the second thing that, as we begin to wrap it up here for just a couple minutes here, inheriting the earth can also result in personal contentment. We talked about contentment with our youth on Thursday night, so it's funny that it runs into this one as well. But meekness results in contentment. Go back up to Psalm 37 at the top, verse 4 that we skipped earlier. It's probably the most famous verse in this psalm, and here's what it says. Psalm 37, 4, delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. We love that verse, don't we? Oh, I want the desires of my heart. Give me the desires of my heart. But the key is where our delight is first. There's an order to this. So here's how I would word this verse to help us maybe think about it in the correct way. Delight drives desire, which determines direction. Delight drives desire, which determines direction. Let me give you a very easy way to think about this. So when Kim and I met at college 20 years ago, I delighted in her. Saw her. We hit it off immediately. We have, you know, we had a similar sense of humor. I don't know what happened there. She never laughs at my jokes anymore. You know, she got the ring on it, and now she doesn't have to laugh ever again. Maybe that's what it is. Or maybe I'm just not funny. I don't know. That's probably more likely. Anyway, so I delighted in her, and my delight drove a desire. So I like being with her, like spending time with her. I like to do that more often. I like to do it so often, I got on a knee and proposed. I want to do this forever with you. So delight drove desire, which determined direction. Here we are in about a week and a half. We'll celebrate 19 years of marriage together, and we just love each other, love Jesus, love doing what he's called us to do. Delight drove desire and determined direction. So I could just go and say, God, give me a wife. It's a desire. But what happened is actually my delight drove my desire, which determined direction. He didn't just plop this desire in my heart just magically. No, it happened in a natural way of life. It happened in this process. And so that's what this is. But meekness is involved here. And let me give you this example really quickly. I know I'm going a little bit over, but let me just mention this story. So King Solomon is a great example of how this works. Before Solomon becomes king, he has this dream, and God says, I'll give you whatever you want, the desires of your heart, right? And Solomon asks for godly wisdom to lead God's people well. And God says, because you delight in me, you had this desire. You see what happens here? I delight in the Lord. My desires somehow are like his desires. The things that he values, I value because I delight in him. The things that he wants to accomplish, I want to accomplish because I'm delighting in him. And that determines the fulfillment of those desires and that direction. So at the beginning, when Solomon prayed for wisdom, he was delighting in the Lord. And God gave him that plus the things he didn't ask for. Right? But then later on, at the end of his life, the delight in Solomon now is no longer in the Lord. He's become distracted by other things and false gods and wealth and relationships. He's gotten the delight off of the Lord, and then his desires change, and then the direction changes. He falls away from the Lord, and the nation falls with him, and the nation falls apart after he's gone. So delight drives desire, which determines direction. Meekness helps me to appreciate the right things, helps me to see the right things, helps me to have desire in the right things, which is the Lord. Here's the last thing as we close. The last verse I'll mention is Psalm 37, back to Psalm 37, verses 16 and 17. It says this, better is the little that the righteous has than the abundance of many wicked. For the arms of the wicked shall be broken, but the Lord upholds the righteous. This leads to, again, contentment. I can be okay with where I am because my delight is in the Lord. I'm not chasing after everything else. I'm not chasing after something else because someone else has it. Too often, people live that way, don't they? Too often, too many people spend money they don't have to buy things they don't need, to impress people they don't even know. We take on extra hours at a job that we hate so that we can buy this thing because our neighbor has it. But no, meekness is just contentment in delighting in the Lord. Even though I may not have what someone else has, my delight is in the Lord. And again, things aren't bad. You can be a wealthy person who delights in the Lord. May it be so in my life. That's my prayer, right? Let me delight in the Lord and be wealthy. I can have both of those. That'd be great. That's fine, right? But the delight is in the Lord, and that requires meekness. not chasing after personal pleasure, not chasing after my own kingdom, not chasing after focusing on these other things, but in meekness, God, may I delight more and more in you. And in that, our desires become more like his, and they are fulfilled more easily, more often. This is the life of meekness. So we see here, in this way, it promotes that flourishing that we've been talking about. Happiness, wholeness, and flourishing. It is this blessed life. Let me just recap it very quickly with what we've been talking about today. A meek person who is humble, patient, and forgiving lives a blessed, happy, and whole life. They inherit the earth by experiencing and promoting this flourishing through a life of contentment and healthy emotional relationships and their genuine positive way of living, which is the way of Jesus. This is the blessed way to live, is this way of meekness. God, help us to live that way. Let's pray today as we close. God, that is our prayer, to help us live lives of meekness, humility in our limitations, to rely upon you more than ourselves, to have patience with your plan, with your way, with your timing ahead of our own desires, that we remain faithful to your plan, forgiveness and healing in others, to not try to get back, not try to judge others, not try to sit in that seat of judgment over them, hold them to this impossible standard, but to live this life of meekness and forgiveness. God, we thank you that you will help us to inherit the earth in this very specific way, that we can have broader, longer-lasting influence in our lives and through our lives as we live this way of meekness, as we learn to express ourselves in this meek, patient, humble, forgiving way. A soft answer that turns away wrath, that we can be that kind of person, a meek person, to inherit the earth, to gain influence, that then, through your power and open doors, we can share the gospel with these people. Because if we've pushed them away by not being meek, they're not going to respond. But we can inherit the earth in this very interesting spiritual way as we give ourselves to you, delight in you. And God, on this Mother's Day, we thank you for meek moms. We thank you for the moms who do so much and are appreciated many times so little. We pray that you would just, they would feel blessed and honored today by you and by their family and by us. We thank you for the meekness that it requires to do the things that a mom is required to do. We pray a blessing upon them and everybody here today. We live this way of meekness, this blessed way of Jesus. We thank you for it all in Jesus' name. Amen.